Hey, everybody. Welcome to the My Wave podcast, where we talk about my wave, my story, my life. We're looking at one topic in this episode, as in every episode, and that is the wave. The wave that a surfer has ridden, that he closes his eyes and thinks back on the most memorable wave. It may be the best wave ever. It may be a wave that wasn't so great, but it made an impact and they just want to share about it. So super excited today to have Matt Beacham with us. He will be here in just a moment. But first, a shout out to this episode's sponsor, and that would be Sully's Archery Tag. Sully's Archery Tag is played like dodgeball, but with arrows. It's a mobile event. They bring the fun to you. You can check them out at sullysarcherytag.com and look them up. And if you're in the Southeast South Carolina area, they will bring the fun to you. So here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, we have tonight Matt Beacham on this episode. Matt, how are you doing?
Hey, Kyle. What's happening? Good to see you.
Good to see you. It was just last week I saw you. You're down here
in
Wrightsville Beach and got some cool stuff going on down this way. Matt, you are, what's your official title as far as what you do for a living?
Yeah, a couple years ago, I started Christian ministry full-time with Christian Surfers. So I'm the regional coordinator for them for the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast at the moment.
Okay.
Which puts me coming to your area pretty often.
Yeah.
And so we get to see each other.
Yeah, it's been awesome to get to know you over the last, say, year and a half as we saw Wrightsville Beach Christian Surfers chapter start back up. And then just a crazy cool thing that God has been doing at Wrightsville Beach with Surf Church. And we actually had a meeting last Thursday with a group from Carolina Beach to see if we can get Christian Surfers Carolina Beach going and get a Surf Church started up down there. Just very, very unique opportunity. And and maybe we'll talk about how you came to this role with Christian Surfers United States here in a moment. But we're here to talk about your most memorable wave. Now, Matt, I have known you longer than I've known you. So I saw you, a while ago. I can't remember what year it was, but I got a hold of a copy of Noah's Ark. Story of Noah Snyder there at the Outer Banks and kind of his story of his life and a professional surfer who had this transformation because of Jesus Christ. It was a really cool story, and you were in that. That's the first time I ever saw you. So you're, though, a professional surfer? Do you say formerly professional surfer? What's your official?
Or just I'm a has-been. No, I'm sure. So I had a fun 12-year career as a professional surfer and did some cool TV and film stuff real heavy towards the end of that, too. We were doing that all along, but got to host a TV show the last 4 years of that. And
really?
It was a nice ending to everything. Yeah, so... But the Noah's Ark thing. So we did ministry projects over the year. We were going to make surf movies anyway. So me and a small group of guys were like, well, what if we were making movies that shared the joy of surfing, but also shared our faith? And we kind of never knew if the next movie we were making was going to be the last one we did. But we seemed to that ball rolled for quite some time. And there was many films. But the one you mentioned, I think, is my favorite, where we told Nick McLean is the director of it. He put his heart and soul into that movie for 3 full years.
Wow.
And, we were there to advise and, obviously we were there for the whole period of time too, but looking back, what came out of that, you'll know as a podcaster, it's important to tell, good stories. It's just a great story that stands the test of time. And I knew once I saw the rough cut of it, that I'd always be able to share this with someone who doesn't surf, someone who does surf, an 80-year-old person, a 10-year-old kid. Yeah. And so it's a really special story. And it definitely shares the love of God really well, because you know, when God does a move like that through a group of friends, which is really what that movie's about, you know, it's hard to argue with it, you know,
right?
Because it's coming at the story's coming at you from all different angles and being validated by all different angles. So mm-hmm. it's special that way.
It was a great flick to sit down and watch with other friends of mine. I've shared it. I've had to chase it down to get it back, but it's been a great one. In fact, I need to go maybe watch it again this weekend. Get a new crew together and say, hey, check this out.
I should probably get someone to put it online where it's easier to watch. I think there's a couple versions on YouTube, but they glitch and stuff. And yeah. It's time to get all that stuff for free online, I think.
There you go. Yeah. Well, awesome. So let's start it out with your location. Where, being a professional surfer for 12 years, you've probably surfed all around the world. And and that's incredible. You know, I've surfed for, well, so I don't know, do the math, like 30 some years. But you know, I've been to South Africa, surfed Jay Bay and a couple places around Jay Bay, which was incredible. Been to California twice, East Coast, Puerto Rico, and that's the extent, but that's still awesome. I mean,
it's a good list.
That's awesome, list. You know, yeah. But when's the most exotic place you've ever been to?
Went to some crazy places that we tried to tell, you know, a surf story from, like Russia, some of the islands north of Japan.
Wow.
We scored South Korea one time, like really scored a typhoon there, and it was real special.
Wow.
And just random places like that, you know, the classic ones like Indonesia and Peru and all this stuff. But there's a couple crazy ones. I've caught waves on the Great Lakes. That was fun. So I got to do some weird ones too with the standard ones.
Yeah.
And it was nice.
That is. Now, I've traveled a lot of the world, but usually I'm standing on the beach watching, like you mentioned, Peru. I've been to Chicama. I've stood on the cliffs of Chicama and just watched this thing peel in. But I was only there for a short period of time, and it wasn't to surf. You know, I've One Chaco was a beautiful spot that I'd love to surf. And anyway, it's unique to be able to travel, but to be able to travel and do something you love, that's an added bonus.
That's absolutely. Really. And kind of what I said about the movies, like I feel like me and my crew, we were always appreciating it when we were at those spots. Cause a surf career is a young man's career, you know, just like so many sports. Mm-hmm. So we didn't know how long the train was going to go. So I believe we were pretty cognizant of that at every twist and turn, and just happy to be there. And that's awesome. Yeah.
So where are we going for your wave that you want to talk about?
If we're going to talk about my favorite wave or my single favorite wave I've ever caught, it was in Nicaragua, and it was Nicaragua? Unexpected. It wasn't the kind of day you thought you were about to get the wave you'll remember most.
Yeah.
But it was a good day. But yeah, we'll go into it. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with where in Nicaragua were you? Or is it a
secret spot? No, it's a pretty well-known beach break there called Colorado's. And this was probably, I don't know, 13 years ago, thereabouts.
Okay.
I was probably about 30 or 31 mm-hmm. years old when I caught this wave. And that beach break is more crowded these days. And I think I've heard the sand is a little different now because of the estuary that was there got blocked a bit. But anyway, Colorado's.
So I think I have seen Instagram ads for buying property around those breaks. Have you seen those? That's probably why things are changing a lot. Everybody's buying up pieces of Nicaragua. I was in Nicaragua probably 20 years ago. We were in Managua on a missions trip. Never made it down to the coast, but I always said to my wife, if ever I ended up with millions of dollars, I would buy some portion of beach in Nicaragua and do a little resort or something. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, because there was so much political unrest there for years, the people somehow actually came out nicer as a people group. They're just very kind and innocent. And so because maybe they were sheltered from so much of the world for so much longer than so many other countries. Cause you know, there was a period of, I don't know,
yeah,
a long decades that you didn't really want to travel there.
Right.
When it slowly started to open up, I mean, the people were just so kind. And Nicaraguans, you know, they're strong people, but kind people.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Definitely. So you're at Colorado's. You're by yourself?
No, that was an awesome trip that hasn't happened since, where we got my brother, my first cousin, and several childhood friends to go on a trip together.
Okay.
And I had a photographer there who's a buddy named Brian Nevins for a little bit of it. But yeah, it was more, it was just a bro trip.
Yeah. So you say friends from childhood, did you grow up surfing?
On the Outer Banks of North Carolina. Yeah. So it was a group from the Outer Banks and one of our buddies had moved inland by that time. I think he was living out of Nebraska at that time.
Okay.
But we all met up and surfed, and we caught one of the best south swells. This wave that I'm going to talk about was somewhere in a very, very good south swell that hit the whole West Coast eventually, and you know, all of Mexico and everything, and hit everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. So growing up at Outer Banks, surf culture's kind of like the fishing culture and the hunting culture out there. It's ingrained in what you do as a person that lives out there. At least that's my assessment. You know, I used to vacation there as a kid, 2 weeks every summer, and then I had the opportunity to live out on the Outer Banks after my freshman year at East Carolina University, and actually worked at Pizza Inn. There, milepost, what, like 2 or 3, where it's La Fogata now.
Now it's La Fogata, yeah.
Yeah, so I used to work at that Pizza Inn there. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was good summer.
What was that the summer of? Ish.
That was the summer of 91.
Yeah.
No.
I would have been,
90. Summer of 90.
I would have been in eighth grade, I think.
91. So right into 91. You'd have been in eighth grade? Yeah. So what are you trying to say, man? What are you trying to say?
Huh? That I'm old, but not as old. No, I was checking.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a good summer. Had some some fun waves that summer and good times.
That's cool.
Outer Banks has always had a special part in my heart. I've got family lives out there, cousins and stuff. So
restaurant work has a special place in my heart. I've worked so many different restaurants over the years.
Yeah, you worked at La Fogata.
I think if you're a surfer and you were just trying to surf, you've worked at pizza joints.
Oh yeah,
restaurants. And you did the whole thing. You did the dishwash, busboy, wait eventually, work the register, flip the pizzas.
Yes. So, funny story. I got up early one morning, surfed, and I didn't have a car. So we'd run straight out, right out. What is that? Down there behind Kmart. Is that 3rd Street, 1st Street, 5th Street, whatever there?
Yeah. Behind Belk is 3rd Street.
3rd Street.
Kmart's in that general area. It's just north of there, yeah.
Yeah, so
which
I was
obviously
living...
Kmart just went out of business like every other big box like that, yeah.
I was living on 3rd Street, so I'd ride my bike straight out. Anyway, I'd ride my bike up to Pizza Inn every day. And I remember surfing that morning, riding my bike up, and my boss was like, "Hey, I'll race you." We would make the buffet pizzas. You know, so I was the morning prep cook. And then the lunch line cook. And so we would make tons and tons of pizzas ahead of time for the buffet when lunch was served. And he was like, "All right, I'll race you on a pepperoni." I was like, "All right, ready, set, go." And I'm throwing down some pepperoni. He's throwing down some pepperoni. All of a sudden, just the water unleashed from my nostrils. You know, and it just all over the pizza. And I started laughing. He looked up. He's like, "What's funny?" And I told him, he was like, "Throw that pizza away." I was like, "No, no, I'll cook it. I'll cook it and eat it myself."
Oh,
but,
no.
He said, "No, throw it away, please.
No, get that out of my oven." Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. So Colorado's got a crew of family and friends from the Outer Banks and made your way down. And how long were you staying?
We did a good week and a half on that trip, I think. About eight days, I think. Yeah.
Nice. Now, did you know the swell was coming?
Yes. Okay. But we had planned the trip anyway. It was like a total score.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we didn't try to plan that swell. It was macking. It was amazing. And But this day was a beach break session. If I remember correctly, we'd already caught a lot of good waves, and maybe it was not a dying swell, but on the other side of the cusp. Mm-hmm. And just kind of hanging in there, the swell was.
Okay.
It was like a beach break session. It was double overhead on sets. It was nice and like everything you would want from a beach break. I just didn't think I was about to get a wave like this. You never do. This wave was magic. But yeah.
So y'all, everybody out, or were there people on the beach, or was everybody?
It was fairly crowded. I want to say there was, 40 people out probably. And okay. And when this wave happened, it was a quick decision, and I was on a little bit in from where I'd been sitting most of the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was making my way back out. I just remember coming over a wave and seeing this double up, and it was a quick decision.
Okay.
You want to go through it?
Yeah. Yeah. So you perhaps finished a wave, paddling back out, you're paddling over, you see it on the horizon.
Yeah, kind of. It was, like I said, I came over one wave, saw this double up, and just spun. And so it was a pretty quick thing. It's not something I spent 30, 45 seconds setting up for. Yeah.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah.
So there it is. It's mm-hmm. in front of you. Did you have to, call some people off of it, or were you on?
No, it was just me. And I was like, dang, this is going to, I just remember thinking, it was a solid double up. It was, the wave was, I'm 6'2". It was a solid 4 foot over my head. You know what I mean? It was a good size wave.
Yeah.
This wave, it's not the biggest wave I've ever caught. Definitely not the scariest wave I've ever caught.
Right.
It was just magic. Like if I could do one out of every good ride and great ride, if I could Groundhog Day this wave.
Yes.
Then I would do this one. But yeah, so I spun. And I remember thinking, I got to get to my feet real quick here. I can't mess around with this drop at all. And so, hucked myself down the face. And I remember doing one big lunge for speed. A lot of times you get to your feet and you're able to go, and do two lunges. And I just remember I pulled under, the lip was coming over as I was doing the first, as my rail caught and I was doing the first big bottom turn lunge. That was it. That's all the time I had. And I was in it. Yeah. And a lot of times that's not enough motion to get your speed for a successful barrel, because mm-hmm. it was just one huge bottom turn lunge. And then you have to do the rest in the tight transition of the barrel. And that's part of what made this wave so surprising. Go ahead, Kyle. Yeah.
No. So I'm painting the picture in my mind, but there may be some people here that are listening or watching and they're like, what do you mean he hooked the wave?
Yeah.
What is a double up?
Double up. So, a lot of times a double up is a wave essentially takes on the energy of two waves. Mm-hmm. It feels like that. It not only looks like that to the eye, it's probably not scientifically exactly like that, but to the eye, it does look like that. It actually looks like there's a wave with a tuck and a warble in it that almost looks like a wave on top of a wave, which mm-hmm. it is sometimes.
Yeah.
But it assumes the power as well of two waves.
Right.
And the opposite can happen. There can be a wave and you can sort of see the power of it get sucked off the back of it and into the wave behind it. A wave can decrease in power, like right before your eyes. Well, usually these double ups, surfers get really excited sometimes because they tend to, wait longer and break a little bit further inside than you're used to sitting. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times guys turn around and they're like, oh, double up. And they tell their friends who are farther inside, like, turn and go on this thing. It's gonna barrel really good. So I saw that it was a double up and it was a nice size double up. A lot of times double ups are a little smaller, but this one was not. And it was just ready to go. And like I said, I threw myself over the falls on it. caught my rail on the bottom turn, did the first speed lunge. Now, when I say first lunge on any wave that you stand up on, unless you're on a longboard and you're just cruising, but if you're on any shortboard of any kind, whenever you get to your feet, you're going not 0 miles an hour, but you're going the slow speed of that wave, the speed that wave is traveling to the shore. Right. You need to go faster than that to have a successful ride in all. At some point on that wave, you need to be going faster than the wave. And some points in that wave, you're going to be going slower than that wave. But at the beginning, you need to be, you know, if you want to have fun and you want to rip and all that stuff, you need to find that speed early. So inevitably, every surfer figures out how to do that in a variety of different situations. But there's a lunging that happens with your body. Like and it's your upper body working with your lower body, working with the board. And usually you go 1, 2, and maybe sometimes you're off to the races with 2. A lot of times it takes 3 times to kind of really get it going as fast as you want to go. But this instance, there was only time to get to the bottom of the wave and do I remember it was a big lunge I did with my body because I knew that was it. Whatever speed I could get to after this bottom turn and this lunge, that's all she rode as far as getting that initial speed to make it through this barrel. And you want me to explain a couple of reasons why the next 10 seconds were magic?
Well, before you get into the magic of the next 10 seconds, I'm dreaming here.
Yeah.
What's the biggest wave you've ever surfed? You said this is double ups, 4 feet over your head. You know, but what's the biggest you've ever surfed?
So I never became a big wave surfer and I would never claim to be, but I dabbled. I was around it enough to experience the fear, the beating heart and everything. some of my friends are absolute psychopaths. Like,
right.
They have this fear thing they can turn off and they can calm their bodies and not get an undue amount of adrenaline that saps their oxygen. And they train in pools and they get ready for all this stuff, but mostly they're just psychopaths. Right. They really are. I think they like have some sort of special fear, no fear mechanism.
Yeah.
And good on those guys. I could name you off like 30 of them, but I'm not one of those guys. I could never, I never trusted my lungs with the Jaws stuff, the YMA stuff, the Maverick stuff, all that. Even though I've been around it, seen it, studied it, it was kind of like medical school or something. It's like, if you're ever going to medical school, you got to get ready for it. You know, yeah. Like you have to put in the work. And I knew that with my lungs and my inability to calm my adrenaline in some of the worst moments, I would have to train for a while for that. And it just was never a part of my surf career. I was always paid to be like, a medium sized wave performer. And, but the biggest wave I've ever surfed was 35 foot on the face. But some of these guys surf waves that are like legit 60 foot on the face.
Right.
You know, and maybe there's a couple of exceptions to that where it's way more than that. But I've gone out. I've been out in I was always uncomfortable, but I've been out at sunset when the channel's closing out, basically. And I've been out at pipe when it's third reef, second reef, and you're dodging those, just trying to get up the right first, bunch of those. Nicaragua done toe-ins on massive outer reef stuff. And that's about the biggest that I would mess with. And and my heart was always challenging me, like, you know, so. And like I said, I just learned from that and got into a couple of hold down situations where wound up on the beach afterwards with my leg shaking, going, wow, I got to the gray place underneath the water. Like I almost ran out of oxygen, like in that situation, like very, very close to passing out. So like I said, you got to listen to yourself, and I'm not able to turn that fear off to where you're not in danger of losing oxygen. So I never really messed with that stuff. I considered it a different sport, to be honest. You need different boards, a different approach to waves. You're definitely not like shredding those waves unless you have straps on your feet and stuff.
Right.
But so I considered it a different sport, and I'm very, I look up to those guys very much.
Absolutely. For their dedication
and bravado. Absolutely.
For sure. For sure. You know, I people send me pictures. Do you see this? I'm like, yeah. Would you ride that? No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not there mentally. I'm an old geezer now. My ship has sailed on that. But No. Even when I was younger and maybe a little more gung-ho. No.
And it's like anything, like, I would love to be in the moment and test my actual surf skills on that, but it's the paddle out and the caught inside and the 60 series of 60 foot face waves on the head, that I know that I'm just personally not, I was never able to sign up for that. And I don't mind saying that. Like, I'm totally okay with that. Like, right. Good on those guys, man. And all those guys pay their taxes.
Yes,
all those guys have stories of passing out underwater, their friends reviving them in boats, hitting the reef so hard that it does something, you know, takes them out of the water for a year. Like all the, you talk to every single one of those guys that I call a psychopath and I respect very much. They all have like the craziest big wave stories. Not to mention, some of them are like, yeah, I was out on an outer reef and, 16-foot tiger was kind of chasing me all day. And, you know, they're crazy, dude.
Wow. So yeah. let's get back to Nicaragua in these next 10 seconds.
Yeah, totally. So we're in Nicaragua. You want me to go through this barrel?
Yes, go through the barrel, please.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so I lunge for speed. And the curtain of the wave is already coming down. So I'm already in the barrel. So I remember thinking everything about the next 10 seconds, and it's confirmed that it was a solid 10 seconds from people watching it. But like, it's kind of like the surf movies I said earlier. We thought that might be our last one, but we made another one. Like every different chamber of this barrel, I was so surprised to still be there for it, or that it even existed. So it was a magical, and even right now, it's special that you have this podcast that you ask people about waves, because these are special memories and you never know when you're going to have this memory. And I was so surprised that my favorite memory of a wave was this. And I love taking myself through this barrel and try to remember every nuance about it. But the first chamber, the wave was big and it was violent. And I kind of got to lunge again, maybe even a couple times. And at this point already, I'm only like 2 seconds into the barrel. And I'm like, wow, this is working out longer than I thought. Now, keep in mind, for the next 8 seconds, I cannot see out the end of this barrel.
No way.
But, and usually in that situation where you can't see out the end of this barrel, you're getting hit with water and you're going through chandeliers and which is falling water in the barrel, and you're busting through that and getting the water out of your face. What was so magic about this barrel is I never got touched anywhere on my body by any part of the wave at any twist and turn in any different chamber of this wave that I was in. It never touched me. Like, so when I came out of this barrel 8 seconds or 10 seconds later, I took a second and I just kind of was standing there on my board and put my head like this and just started screaming like a victory roar, but also just very surprised. I just screamed like, and I think, you know, just like a little bit of laughter at the end of it, like, and just like eventually just fell off. And my cousin told me later at dinner that night, like, I heard you screaming. And I thought to myself, that's not a light thing that Matt's screaming like that. Something really good must have just happened. But okay, so I'm in this barrel, right? And 2 seconds into it, I'm already having these thoughts like, wow, this thing's still going. I kid you not, I made it through like the barrel went through a series of just like what's the word?
Contractions.
Something. Yeah, yeah. And then it would open up. And then, so the next 6 seconds, I was traveling and just waiting. Like, I remember one time I let my balance be a little bit more on my heels than I would have, almost just kind of waiting for the barrel to do what most barrels do when you're that deep in the barrel, is the foam, the white water comes under your fins and just sort of takes the board away. And if you're kind of ready for that, then you have a way less chance of your board hitting you. But I was so ready for that to happen, and it wasn't happening. And I still couldn't see out the end of this thing. And like I said, I still hadn't been touched by this barrel at any point. Let's say we're 5 seconds into it. Well, then I started having thoughts, and everything is slow motion. It literally, then I started having thoughts, and it's funny how your thoughts do, because there really was chapters in my thoughts during this thing. God made our brains to be able to, in hindsight, we can go, well, that's when I had the thought that maybe I should really tighten up here. This is like one of the best barrels I've ever been in, you know, like I had that sort of subconscious, very quick split second thought, like 5 seconds into it. So then I wasn't on my heels anymore waiting for it to knock me off. And I was just going in another chamber, and about 7 seconds, maybe 8 seconds into it, for the last 2 or 3 seconds in this, it dawned on me that I need to try to do everything I can to make it out of this barrel. And it still had not hit me, and this barrel never hit me. And with 2 seconds left, like 15 feet in front of me, I could see the opening. I could finally see out the end of it. And at that point, my brain was literally in shock, and I was going, no way. And I still thought there was a huge chance that I could get clipped in the head or in the arm or foam balled or, you know, off my board. I still thought there was a huge chance that this barrel would end in me cartwheeling, and the next 2 seconds were just all focus and disbelief. And then I just slipped out the end, and even on the exit of this barrel, the barrel did not touch me. It did not touch me the whole 10 seconds. The wave did not lay a finger on me. It was crazy. So I came out in disbelief. I let it out this primal scream, and then I was just like, I can't remember much other than there was a guy sitting in a chair on the beach. There was a couple guys that saw it, and he was an American-born guy that's been living in Nicaragua for a long time. And he told one of my friends was up there next to him, and he turned to his buddy, and my friend overheard it and was like, that was a full 10-second barrel, which is about what I thought it was, which is a pretty ridiculous amount of time for a beach break barrel. You know, and I just couldn't believe it. And I just played it in my head. And then I don't think it was till about 10 years later, maybe 5 years later, that I was like, no, that's the best one. That's without a doubt, my favorite wave I've ever caught. And then now it's set in stone. Like, I've had a bunch of incredible waves, but for some reason that one seemed like a miracle. It seemed like a miracle. It doesn't even make sense to me what happened on that wave. And I was so not expecting. That day was amazing. That day was very good, but I was not expecting that. You never expect that. Mm. So, yeah,
no, there it is. No other waves like that rolled through that day.
I can't imagine. It was so special. You know, we see... Yeah. A lot of times you see barrels paddling out or whatever, and you're like, how long could someone have been in that? Mm-hmm. And I'm not even sure someone could have looked at this wave and realized that someone could go through that for 10 seconds without getting touched or whatever. Maybe it did look like that. There was no one paddling out. There was just those guys that saw it on the beach. And one of my friends was up there to kind of stand behind them and hear their reaction to it.
Wow.
And that's my favorite one, Kyle.
That's awesome. Wow. I enjoyed that. Can you tell
Cole,
me?
I hope you enjoyed it, because I was just in it right there. I was yes. in that barrel again. So I was just in that barrel again. I hope I took you and a couple of people or a few people through that. It was a miracle. It really was. I mean, I don't use that term lightly, you know, not like a miracle, like we see people's lives change or healed or something. But like, to me, that wave was a miracle. Like, just statistically, like, what are the odds?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, man, thank you for sharing that.
So I do have to say thank God for that wave. Yeah. And, you know, because that was part of the primal scream when I came out. It's just like, how in the world
did you just
bless me with that? Like, did you feel like I should experience that on planet Earth? You know, just didn't seem like something that we get to experience here. Yeah, it really didn't.
That's those little gifts that you step back in life and you have to appreciate and then thank the creator. You know, he's the one that gave you the strength and the opportunity and the blessing of being able to surf and to capture something like a wave.
And for it to happen just out of the blue like that too. Not out of the blue, I mean, like, but I've already said that a few times. Like, it's very unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's a lot like God, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he brings those things into our lives totally unexpected. And I think it's just a continual reminder. Hey, I love you.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Now, you know, we're winding down. What advice would you give to someone listening to this podcast? Maybe they're new to surfing or they've been surfing for a little while. And what would be some advice you could give them?
If you're new to surfing, welcome, enjoy it. It's got to be, you know, it's hard to say it's the most beautiful sport, but I don't know how it couldn't be, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was just talking to a group about this this week, that I think surfers have this inherent responsibility to kind of search for God. And I used the example, I was like, okay, picture another sport. And for some reason, my brain just said, a handball player. Nobody plays handball anymore, I don't think. It used to be pretty big. But a handball player, you're just beating that ball. Let's say racquetball. You're just beating that ball against that little room. You know, you're facing that wall, you know. And good for you. Like, I've watched amazing racquetball players. They're insane. But there's nothing about that racquetball room that makes you go like, oh, wow, like, when we paddled out in the dark today and saw that sunset and it was just pink and peach everywhere. And then I got a barrel and the whole inside of that barrel was pink and peach.
Yeah.
Like those things like coax you to come out of yourself and mm-hmm. come out of the ways of thinking that are so trite, you know? And I to someone who's new at surfing, I just say, hey, this is one of the most beautiful sports ever. If you're at a place where you can realize God blessed you with that, even better. Mm-hmm. And you're signing up for like the most beautiful lifelong experience, you know, and it's got danger and it's got, you know, you'll get injured sometimes. Like I have this list of injuries that doesn't even sound fun at all. Like I tore my bicep in two pieces. I bent my big toe all the way back to hit the foot one time and it hurt for 5 years. And like, you know, I've blown knees and ankles and torn weird muscles. I just tore a weird muscle in like my back, like 2 weeks ago, you know, it's just like, it's dangerous and it's beautiful and it's awesome, but you can also just kind of cruise for the most part, not put yourself in those situations. And I just say to anyone starting surfing, like, yeah, just welcome, man. Welcome to one of the most beautiful things ever and enjoy it. And
sweet.
Hopefully you can find God through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely.
That was a great wave story.
I appreciate you asking me. And when you told me the idea for this podcast, I'm like, that's so cool. Because everybody, every surfer, a novice, intermediate, expert, they're all going to have something that just stands out in their head.
Truth.
And hopefully they'll feel telling you what I just felt. I really felt like I just relived it. And I haven't, you know, you forced me to do that. I went through all 10 seconds of that thing again, dude. I'm kind of adrenalized right now.
Where do you watch this video though? You're going to be like, you're in it, man. You're in that barrel again. That was awesome. Well, Matt, thank you so much. Hey, did you know that surfing is in the Bible? Have we had this conversation?
Well, you and I mentioned to each other, but I think it's awesome what you're about to say.
Yeah. So Acts chapter 27, verse 44, Paul was heading to Rome, and there was a bad storm. The ship was caught on some rocks, hit the sandbar or whatever, and it was being broken to pieces by the waves. And it says that they all the sailors and all the prisoners and whoever else was on that boat, it says they all made it to shore. It says some on pieces of the ship and others on boards. Sounds like surfing to me.
Dude, it was kind of surfing by force. Right. Like you're on a shipwreck and you make your way through the whatever the break looked like. Yes, but they surfed nonetheless. Yes.
Well, my thought is, you know, if there was, what does the Bible say? There's like over 200 people on that ship.
Right.
You know, there was like one or two of those guys were like, hey, you want to go? That was kind of fun. Let's go do that again. Anyway, that's just my thinking.
I don't think they use leashes. That's what I'm
no, thinking. I don't think they had leashes. No. Well, brother, thank you so much.
Thank you. And I don't think a lifeguard gave him a ticket for not wearing a leash that day either.
No.
Well, what if you kept trying to end this and I kept going? And I bet it was chest high in the brown water.
It must have been. It was Mediterranean.
Matt, we got to go. Oh, I bet a couple of them were like, that was fun. Let's keep doing it.
That's right.
And no, Kyle, you can't end your podcast.
But what did they use for wax? Pine tar? Yeah, you know, something.
Maybe they were already that advanced in thinking like, hey, we're going to get to shore in the shipwreck, but we're going to slide off in those waves.
Yeah.
So they...
I wonder if they laughed at the one guy that was like laying on his belly on the smaller piece going in.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, man.
I don't know. Well, thank you so much, buddy.
We can only speculate.
That's right. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you again. My Wave Podcast. Hope you enjoy what you listen to. Share it, like it, subscribe, and we'll see you soon.